Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
The very best guests of this podcast come from when one friend recommends another, and my friend Kristen Winkle-Beck, past guest of the podcast and longtime friend of the podcast, said you simply have to talk to my yogi friend, Padma Nuna. And Padma Nuna cooked for us. And so we had this meal, had a conversation before the meal in her home, and she was part of an arranged marriage. And in her case, when this arranged marriage failed, her world fell apart. And she was forced to really step up and become the brilliant, resilient woman that she is. Padma Nuna.
And every single day I had to tell myself, no, I believe in me and my conviction to keep this family together. And as much as I can, I'm going to try my best.
This is In Her Words, a podcast from manlisting.com, featuring one man listening to the stories of real women in their own words. In Her Words, a conversation worth hearing because every woman deserves to be heard.
Hey there, hi there, and welcome to In Her Words, the podcast. I've already blathered on too much. Thank you, Padma Nuna, this week's guest, for inviting us into your home, for sitting down, for preparing a scrumptious meal, and then sending me home in Indian tradition with a gift for my wife and also the leftovers from the meal and a little Tupperware for my wife and I to enjoy later on. Just a gracious hostess with an incredible story of immigrating to this country and finding a way to make it work. Padma Nuna.
Where were you born?
I was born in a small town called Nellore in southern part of India, which was very close to the island that I grew up on.
What's the island?
It's the equivalent of Cape Canaveral. It's called Sriharikota, Shar for short. And it's an amazing island with rocket launching as the only mission for everybody that's living there. My mom was a teacher and my dad was an amazing rocket scientist. I was born 10 months after their wedding, almost precisely. And I was a premature baby, I believe. So I was very tiny, and I don't think I gave her that much trouble. She never complained about it, so I think I was okay. I do recall my dad always telling me how proud he was holding me in his arms.
Wow.
And apparently I was just like a pink rose is what he would call me. It was like, you were just so precious. I think they were proud parents at that moment.
So you always felt deeply wanted and loved, appreciated?
Absolutely. That was the best childhood I could have ever asked for. And then life happened. Mm-hmm. Certainly as parents, they give you love, they give you direction, they give you the guidance. And especially in a small island, there was nothing much to do. So I rode my bike. We would visit the mainland for summer holidays or if there was any family event. But otherwise, it was school, coming back home, learning all the extracurriculars. And the love was overpouring between what my mom and dad and my little tiffs with my younger sibling, my brother.
So there were just the two of you?
Just the two of us.
Wow. What was... Because different parts of India have very different cultures. Mm-hmm. How would you describe the culture there?
in the island that I grew up on, it was almost like a little township where there were folks from all over India. So it was almost like a mini India there. So there were folks from northern part of India. There were folks from the remote parts of India. It was literally the intellects of India sort of came together to figure out these rocket launching missions that were happening. And it was still in the very early days of the Indian Space Research Organization that's called ISRO. So the culture was very much a blended one from all over India. And the interesting part was there was a lot of collaboration with other parts of the world as well. So we would have visitors coming from Russia, coming from China, coming from other parts, depending on the type of research that they were probably doing. I don't quite recall every visitor that came home, but there were a couple of times that we had to host a few of the, as we called, foreigners at that time. And my job was to set the table. So I would cut the flowers, cut the little colorful crotons, as we call them, from the garden, and set the table in a way that was appealing for the dinner. So I still enjoy setting the table in colorful ways. So
even though there would have been, since people were from all over, some Muslims, it was primarily Hindu.
So when I say blend, it truly was because we did have a temple, a mosque, and a church. So we, it was all within a 1 mile radius. So I literally would visit all three of them on Sundays. And I was told you cannot quite go into the mosques. And there was a bike repair shop right in front of it. So I would actually ride the bike just because I was curious, what do they do there? Why do they put the so we would talk about it. So there was certainly Islam. There was certainly primarily Hindus. So the temple was the prominent one. And the church was as prominent. And there were several of our teachers that were Catholic, that were Baptists, that were Protestants. So it was a very good mix of very broad-minded religious mix there. Yeah.
What's your favorite like Hindu practice or ceremony that you're like, oh, that's so comforting, I enjoy that still?
So the chanting is a very rhythmic, vibrational chants that happen over centuries and that have been built over centuries. So for me, I don't know if it's a Hindu practice per se, but when you hear the chants, it's certainly the Vedas, as they say, the Vedic influence that I may have had growing up, that I have internalized in my system, that a day doesn't go by from a Hindu perspective that I listen to a chant or I chant myself. So when I hike, I chant. When I sit down, I chant. And I listen to chants all the time. So that's a very comforting ritual for me on a daily basis.
Well, let me ask about the big three. That is birth, marriage, and death. So is there a birth ceremony?
So there's, that's a great question. There's actually in Hindu religion, 16 of those, as they call samskaras, 16 of those rituals that happen. So I apologize. I thought ritual, you meant like from a religious ritual. But the one that the birth is called Namakaran. So where you are christening the baby and you celebrate the baby's arrival at the 3 month point, at the 21 day point, it's called the cradle ceremony. So they put the baby in the cradle. And it is just a beautiful set of like celebrations and the traditions that come with it. Everybody comes, visits. On a practical level, oh my gosh, I don't know how the moms put up with it, because they are sore, they're tired, but you're supposed to wear a sari, you're supposed to look good by the third month and everybody's going to come and visit. It's like, bless their hearts. And I had to do that. We did that for both our girls at the 3 month point. And then you are supposed to offer the hair by the before the 10th month. And then you're supposed to let them have the first solid food before the 6th month. So that's a whole ritual where they put pen and books and everything and say,
all right, baby, go crawl and pick your favorite thing. And then if they pick a pen, they're going to be a writer. If they pick a book, oh, you're going to be an amazing academic. And then if they pick the wallet or the money, oh, you're going to be so rich. You know? So they were fun to follow. The marriage is a
very big... Do you know what you picked?
I was told I picked both gold and a book. I believe I took both my hands and put them on both. So it was, and my name means goddess of wealth. So they actually felt that, you know, my name is Padmaja after my grandmother. So apparently my mom and dad were pretty happy that it's like, oh, she's got a good balance there, you know, so it's good.
Do you think that that means something to you, that you, because?
Not really. Not specific, because I don't have memory of it per se, but I do love reading. I'm a voracious reader, so I think the book had something to it. I'm not as fond of like the flaunty display of gold, which is very common in India. I do enjoy designing some exquisite pieces for myself that mean something to me. So I guess they're both meaningful in some ways, that I did pick something that meant something to me.
And I forgot that in a lot of religions, there's a becoming a man, becoming a woman. Mm-hmm. There's some sort of ceremony within
yes,
the church.
That is. So we actually did that for my daughter.
Could be 15, 16, something around there.
So when they hit the puberty, you certainly, you know, so it's somewhere between 11 to 15 for girls. But in our families, between 10 and 11, the uncle, so the girl's mom's brother, or anybody in that role, or with that relationship, I should say, is supposed to come and bless the daughter. I actually did a lot of research on why that is the case. And mm-hmm. we did that for both my older one and my younger one, where we celebrated them. To say between 10 and 11, you're going to be coming of age very soon, and we love you, and we're going to be very supportive of you. And I think I know why it happens between 10 and 11 now, because once they're teenagers, they're a menace, and it's tough to kind of get them
to sit. You can still get to them.
Where you can have them sit, and my older one actually thought it was her birthday, and that everybody was just coming and blessing her and giving her gifts, so she had a blast. She had no idea what it was about. My younger one also enjoyed it. We did that in November of 22, over Thanksgiving. So the entire family came and she had a blast. We had her favorite songs playing. We had all her favorite food and all her friends danced for her. So it was a fun thing. But that's a very big, moment from a family perspective, but it's a smaller, more intimate setting rather than, but nowadays it's become a very big deal, and they throw pretty much like a marriage. They do a big, big party.
A lot of times they say here the funerals are for the living, and they're a real ordeal that the families can't really mourn, can't really grieve, because they have to kind of put on some sort of face in public. You can't just lose it. Is there a ceremony that allows you to grieve, that allows you to really grieve and feel supported?
I haven't experienced the death ceremony until my own grandmother's in 2015. And I was shocked at how much so there's a day three event. So the actual funeral happens, and on day three, they actually mourn. It's a lot of grieving that happens. Then there's a lot of rituals between day three to day 11. And there's a very strong belief that the soul sort of leaves the body, but is around for about 11 days, kind of seeing who's doing what. What just happened? I left my body. And waiting for that 11 days, the 11th day is the life celebration that happens. And my parents were actually here with me in Charlotte that time. I was in New York for a pretty big presentation to my CFO. I was with TIA at the time. My aunt kept calling me probably like 20 times. It was like 6 a.m. I woke up. I was like, there are like 50 calls. What just happened? She said, your dad needs to get on the next flight. I said, gosh, like, what am I doing? Like, how am I going to do this? So I was on the call with my dad, like, pack your bags. I'm booking your flight. I'm taking the next flight. So I'll see you at the airport. And you're going to catch that flight because grandma is very, very sick. And she's probably, they're waiting for you to arrive so she can kind of leave the body. And it was tough because all the five sons for her, one of them passed away in 2010. So all the other five sons, both the daughters, all the seven kids, she was very close to all of them. And all 17 of us grandkids, we just dropped everything and just like everybody caught a flight and just we were all over the world and we just all kind of anyone who could reach there to see her body, we were there. And I could experience the 11 days of grief with my family. And I was, I think I'm still her favorite granddaughter, although I have stiff competition with all the other grandkids. But I think I'm her favorite grandchild. She does have a very favorite grandson who lives in Atlanta, and we always joke about it. But he and his sister were certainly the closest to my grandma because they grew up in the close proximity and all that. But I claim that I'm her favorite. I actually took the initiative for day 11 because I just liked putting things together for a celebration. And I thought of all her favorite things. She liked drinking coffee. So I picked her favorite coffee powder and we got the creamer, the instant coffee powder and the creamer and the sugar. And we got these coffee jars for everyone and we distributed to everyone. So the grieving certainly happened. And for me, that's when it hit me very hard to see my dad with the head clean shaven, all the brothers, and they went and kind of took the ashes, went to the river. And it was very hard for me to see all that. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to stay and I'll work from here. So I stayed there. I took my younger one as well. So my dad took that flight. And the very next flight, I took the next one and took my younger one and went. And we stayed. We stayed for a couple of weeks with my parents and made sure that I could process my first time seeing death of some. She was 97. She had a great life. She left the way she wanted to leave. There were like 10 of us grandkids giving her body a bath, like how she used to give us a bath. So we had time to grieve and we had time to celebrate her as well. And we all still are very, very proud grandkids of her. Love is something that sort of permeates in our family, and we kind of, and her tears too, because she would always cry, like, I don't want to leave you guys, is a common thing she would say. So I think we still cry when we leave each other to say, all right, just for grandma's sake, let's shed a tear or two, you know. So thank you for that question. That was a very emotionally.
You said that you had the perfect childhood until life came along. What does that mean?
For my 40th birthday, I really thought, gosh, how can I top this? Like, I had a sizable donation that I made to the Susan Komen Foundation. I did not want a big dinner. I just wanted to dance. I had a Zumba party. I had a pink party. Everybody wore pink. I had 40 types of desserts. I was serving all the hors d'oeuvres to everyone, and my parents were there. Both my daughters were there. My ex-husband was there. I said, life can't get any better. And there were 30 of my girlfriends. We danced, we sang, we played games, and I wore a pink outfit. And I thank God that let my 40s go with this kind of celebration with my close family and serve the community in a way that is unique to me. And I actually still am friends with the lady who baked all those goodies for me. She's from Tunisia and she has amazing baking skills. And she still says, I think you are the first one and probably the only customer I had with that kind of request. Say, just, it doesn't matter what you bake, just bake me something sweet that is unique to my personality. And she made these beautiful pink display. At that moment, I had no idea what the 40s was going to bring to my life. till then, I got married very young. I came here to study at Texas A&M. I was a, if I may say so without being pretentious, I was a brilliant student. I was academically very good. I did not know what life was. I never saw pain. I was never in distress. I would get on a bus, go to college, which was a couple of hours away because my dad didn't want me to go off to any northern part of India, which I did get into some great schools. And then I think I fought with him enough to say, I want to go to US, I want to go to study. And because he couldn't come in, he's an electronics engineer. He was, he did his master's in India, but he's like, you know what? She's right. I need to send her without getting her married. So I think I got a little bit of time before I had to get married. It was a lot of pressure for him to get me married. So that was my first big, it's not just studying. It's not me just being great at what I do. I actually have to adjust with another human being. 20 years later, I was married at 21. At 40, I had two beautiful daughters, a lovely home, great career. I was an amazing, just the life that I had, I literally was like, gosh, this is sweet. I'm able to balance. I'm giving back to the community. I'm able to raise my daughters. I'm able to stay in touch with my mother-in-law used to visit us. My parents are around, like stay in touch with all my cousins. I stay in touch with my, for most part, with my ex's family. And it seemed beautiful. And then something started changing slowly and steadily. I could see no one ever tells you that life happens. But I think in the last 5 years, almost to date, is when my journey began of change. And I realized that the one that was the heaviest for me was what I needed to tackle, something that I was putting off for so long, is standing up for myself. And it was one thing to say in words that, all right, go do great work at your job. Go dance, you know, go be passionate about what you enjoy doing. Go hike, go to the nature, go travel. Don't think I ever actually stood up for what I truly believed in. I followed my dad's direction to study well and like do all that. I think I was a pretty decent spouse. I cooked, I took care of the kids. So, yeah. And about 3 years ago, my ex left and I went through a pretty tumultuous 3 years. And in every way, the core of the family was being shattered. And my core beliefs of what I grew up with was just completely just going away. And every single day I had to tell myself, no, I believe in me and my conviction to keep this family together. And as much as I can, I'm going to try my best. But there were days that I would think, gosh, can I really get up tomorrow? There were a couple of months that I couldn't even drive in the year of my separation. My family came and picked me up from Atlanta. They took care of my child and me to say, gosh, you're shivering. Like you're even talking about this. And I think I'm still shivering. I've gotten a lot stronger from then. Even 2 years ago, I went to the airport in Atlanta without my passport, traveling to Romania. That's how bad I just was bombarded with just the tactical stuff to do, the emotional drain, my kids who were getting affected. And that's when life happened. And I think that's when the real growth happened for me personally. I wouldn't trivialize the 20 years before that to, yes, I grew as a person. Yes, we had lovely travels. We had a pretty good job, pretty good impact on my kids, I'd say. My daughter was in Portugal this past week and she sends me a note, picture of her with the rainbow. And she says, just finished a hike, coming down rain and look at the beautiful rainbow, taking a page from mom's philosophical book. I was like, I raised this kid well, you know, it is, she's traveling, she's remembering what I taught her, you know, she said that I should, you know, I would appreciate the rainbow only when I go through the rain. And And those are the moments that I was like, yeah, I did okay on that. But it's when things start falling apart and your identity as what you're supposed to be, is what is inculcated in you from the childhood, just disappears. And then what do you do? And then I think the last 2 years was when more life started happening. Okay, you lose your job. Gosh, I did master's and I did my MBA and I was amazing and I was awesome. This, you know, it's all this. It wasn't pride per se. It was just the confidence that, yeah, I do a decent job and I'm amongst the best of best. Yet when things start falling apart, like, I don't know anyone else that went through this. How am I supposed to, like, maneuver through this? And I think one of the things that continued with what my parents taught me is just that highly ethical integrity and just being truthful to myself. I told myself lots of lies over the years. Oh, I'm happy. I'm fine. No, I wasn't. I just kept telling myself that it's all okay. But when I had to kind of face it and not just say it's going to be fine, that's when the real Padma started coming out. And Padma means lotus. And I had to bloom in muddy waters. And that's when I thought, my name is truly coming alive in this journey. So let me keep blooming. There were days that I would wither away and I would say, oh, I could have done better today. It's okay. Let me be kind. And that's the spot I would sit in and say, I'm going to be kind to myself today. That means I'm just going to read a book. I'm not going to let this overachieving Padma take over. I have to say no to a lot of things. I had to shrink myself to just what's needed. Focus on my kids. We celebrated an amazing graduation for my older one. She was a great Tar Heel.
Congratulations.
Go Tar Heels. She was in her blue gown, and I was the proudest mom. I think after the moment that I first held her, that moment was just beautiful. We celebrated at home in our old place, and we had all her close friends that she grew up with come over, her family friends, her dance teacher who shaped her teenage years, and she really was a big influence on how she's turned out today, such a strong, mature girl. And the community of friends that we've formed over the years, and we've lived in Charlotte for 19 years now, so I didn't realize how many connections we've had. And we had this little pop-up congratulations Sumani on there. We had this outdoor dinner set up and everybody spoke about her. And then she went off on a backpacking trip to Europe. So that was my gift to her, to go travel, girl. And then we all met up in Romania for a family wedding after, for which I forgot the passport. So that was my shortest international trip, 36 hours, but the best one. Sorry for that long-winded response, but I had to explain the depth of life is only realized when I think you experience that pain. And I still am. I'm still not done. There's still some tumultuous days. The last couple of days have been that. Yet, it's when that happens is when the real person in you comes out, the genuine person that.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
Some people are starting to change death ceremonies and not have traditional funerals. And they're also changing and adding ceremonies for divorce, even celebrations. What exercise or what could you even formalize into a ritual if you were to advise Padma from 5 years ago?
I actually did it. It's a great question, because I asked myself, I don't know if celebration is the right word. It's still, I still grieve many days. I lost my family. I don't have a family of four to feed, so I don't cook. So I love cooking. I love feeding people. I don't have, of course, my daughter would have left, my older one would have left, but it also felt like suddenly, poof, everybody just disappeared. There's no one to have dinner with. And so I grieved. It was tough to kind of break apart my home into cardboard boxes. And I must have taken about 400 cardboard boxes. So I did do a ceremony. And this will be interesting because most of my girlfriends who were at my 40th birthday party, some of them came. And I made some new friends over the journey. And I did a house chill party. Instead of housewarming, everybody does a housewarming when you go into a new home. I did a house chill party with my prenatal yoga instructors and the one that was supposed to be my midwife. She then became a belly dancing instructor, and she also taught what she called this release through dancing and some very interesting ritual that she made us do. So we sat in a circle, all of us, in an empty house. I made dinner it was a Friday evening. I said, Katie, I think there's going to be about maybe five women that showed up. I invited everybody who helped me pack, who helped me kind of clear this house, which was full of memories, books. I love reading, so there were books all over. My kids' art, my kids' schools, you know, annual, like the yearbooks, everything. Like it was heart-wrenching to go through. The first day I started packing, it was like, gosh, this is going to be hard. The kitchen, you know, pulling them out of the drawer. So it was tough to, all my friends would come and pack, help me pack. And that's when I had to lean on all of them because I started doing it myself and Max wasn't necessarily helping. So I said, let me start packing. And then I realized this is going to be an emotionally draining task. It's not where you're packing for moving someplace bigger, better. You're actually shrinking. So whatever I would have done 20 years from now, I had to start doing. So the house chill party was a great success. Everybody.
How many people?
30 people showed up.
Not five. 30.
All 30 of them who helped me pack every box showed up. So our common yoga instructor, Sandy, showed up with her husband, Randall, and they helped me through everything. And there was a giraffe that broke during my move. Handed it to them and I said, this was a symbol of love for me. Right now, I'm just not feeling it. So can you please fix it for me? So it's still with them. I haven't brought it back home yet. But it was moments like that they all came and thanked me and said, we don't know about you, but we released a lot of stuff. You know, we were able to. So there were physicians in there. There were friends that came and helped me and my daughter in every way possible, like clearing out shoe racks. Nobody does that. Like, those are my shoes. Like, please don't touch them. And they would be like, nope, you're just going to, just you go do your thing. We got this. And they still say I did 95% of it and they only did five. But for me, I am so grateful for all of them just showing up. So it wasn't a celebration. It was still grieving. I cried. I wore a goofy dress and I said, look, I planned this house for my grandkids to come. So I had a second floor laundry room so that Sumani's kids could kind of wash their clothes up there. And giving up on the library room, giving up on like all the things that I thought we would kind of grow into was tough, was devastating. I'll just say it. My kitchen garden that I painstakingly put together, all my flower beds, you know. It was, at the same time, it was also, as I was telling before, what's important to you? My peace of mind. I want to move to a place that I can manage. And there was a quote that I made for myself. Home, you're not working for me. So I'm not going to work for you. So bye. And we released that. And that was the first sign of me saying goodbye to my past life. Like, cut it off. And And from then on, there are so many things I had to reprioritize. So I wouldn't say it was one big one. And when I moved to this house, we had to change the ritual a bit because most of the Hindu rituals require a man to be next to the woman. So the wonderful priest actually changed some of the phrases in Sanskrit to make sure that I still, because I believed in those rituals, I believed in breaking the coconuts and breaking the pumpkin and all that. He didn't skip a single ritual. He did a 2.5 hour ceremony and all my girlfriends showed up. Some of the husbands showed up after. We are still able to inaugurate the arrival of a new life. And this is my safe space and my temple. And this place is my sacred place to restart my life.
You said you went on a trek, a hike in Peru. Mm-hmm. How did you decide there and what did that mean to you?
So year after we moved into this house was our first sort of year of the divorce decree. And my commitment to myself that day was, and I had also started a new job on that day, on July 11th. And that was also a full moon day in July. It was supposed to be the big full moon. And I said, by the next full moon next year, around this time, I should be at a higher level of thinking and a higher elevation in general. Like just, I should, simple living and high thinking were what my parents taught me. And I just said, how do I get to that high thinking? We've been doing this. We wanted to do the seven wonders of the world. I was already done. We did the Great Wall of China, Taj Mahal, Petra. We did the pyramids in 2018 as a family. And it was sort of difficult for me to say, can I do this next wonder by myself? So the next one on the list was Machu Picchu, but I said, I don't want to just go and see the place and check off a box. I want to experience it the way and I happened to have the time. So we trained for about 4 months and with a small group and I wanted to do it by myself, but one of my friends, she was gracious enough to join and we were at that 17,000 feet above sea level. It was surreal. It was a truly higher elevation, higher thinking. There were mosquitoes biting us. I fell off a horse. I was like, I'm glad I fell on the right side, not the wrong side. The wrong side would have been the cliff. You know, I fell on my left side. The right side would have been the deep cliff and I would have been on the news, I guess. But it was a very tough hike. For me, I was never athletic. I do my yoga. My PE teacher was probably the only one that would complain to my mom and dad that I'm not running the enough laps and I would go sit under a tree and read a book. You know, she's like, she's making excuses. She's supposed to be tall or whatever at that point. So she should be, you know, running. And, it was tough. I'm glad that was a very meaningful one for me and I wanted to do it alone. There are wonderful groups of hikers in Charlotte area that do it together, but I really wanted to experience it myself and I'm glad I did. The Rainbow Mountain moment was really like one of those surreal moments, like, yes, I think if I can do this, the next part should be okay in my life. I should be able to move on. I should be able to trek along. Climbing up is one thing. Climbing down was actually harder. So that's what I felt. This part of my life, I'm climbing down, but I need to be a bit more careful with my hiking sticks. I have to be careful where I step on those rocks. That don't go too close to the cliff. Don't trust that every horse is going to take you to the next place. Even the best trip mode of transportation can get you in trouble. And just trust people on your journey. There were amazing folks that I met, a 72-year-old woman who actually came when I fell. She put ice on my head and said, Padma, you can do this, come on. And then we were at Machu Picchu, the foothill, and she actually danced with me all through the road. She's like, how are you doing now? I was like, good, then come on, let's dance. You know, so for me, it's inspiring to see that kind of energy from people all over the world. There's not one way to live. And that was family.
Yeah. There are men who get divorced and they never trust women again. And there are women who get divorced and they never trust men again. Your dad, good guy. You know, you've got cousins, uncles, good guys. You don't have any sons. But from where you grew up in that culture all the way to the US culture now, there's plenty of toxic masculinity around, plenty of examples of men behaving badly. What is a quality that in your culture, whether from a god or whatever, that god is seen as masculine?
Mm-hmm.
What is a quality ascribed to that which is noble or higher that you can still look to see in some men? Like, your best friends might be female now, but how is it that you're able to be betrayed or let down by a man and still sit here and talk to a man?
I had to ask that question of myself many, many times in the last 5 years. And there was a period that I was very angry with my dad as well. I was angry at the patriarchal system. I was angry at why is the system so bad? Why is there different rules for men and all these stipulations and guidelines for women that are so different? Yet there are good people. They're all human. It's the situations and the upbringing and the role models that they had that make them the way they are. They're not born to be bad. No human is. And certainly my spiritual practices between the yoga and the meditations, I've sort of come to terms with some aspects. Yet the deep pain that I continue to sometimes go through questions that. Can I ever trust someone? I'm not sure. What is that one god or the ideal man in Hindu mythology? Is Rama. His picture was all over the billboards in the world because the Rama temple just was inaugurated in January in India after 500 years of very tough war. And the characteristic of Rama as a god or as a human god was just being kind to the people around, yet being able to leave all the riches because of a word that he gave his dad and take his wife. And when his wife is taken away, he fights with the evil. And as much as it's a character, it also is an embodiment of life story to say, how do you kind of have the power to build an army of monkeys, monkey gods, go fight with the ego within you, which is the god that, or the king that took away his wife, and still bring her back in a way that is celebrated around the world as a victory. It is, they call it dharma, so righteousness, and being able to be fair to humans around you is a tough one. And yes, he then left after. I did visit his temple in India when I was visiting before this inauguration happened. That was in 22. And my cousin's wife, she's the Romanian girl, Dan, she asked me, I go by Chinnu at home. It's my nickname. Chinnaka, Akka is sister. So, Chinnaka, why are you visiting the temple of the god who left his wife in the forest? Why are you going and praying to him? I said, I just like him as a god. I have some strong beliefs, so let's just keep walking. Let's just keep going. But I asked myself that question many times because after the fact, after he brings her back, the wife back, he does leave her in the forest for something that he heard from his kingdom. And she was pregnant at the time. And so there's a lot of questions around that. But without going into the debates there, that is the noble feature of a man that I would continue to respect, is being competent and fair to yourself first and the people around you.
What are the strongest characteristics in you after all this that you didn't even know you had? What did you learn that you had by virtue of this horrific wound?
I didn't realize I had this much grace and positivity in me. And that actually led to more strength. Choosing to take the higher road every single time I had to fall was tough. Choosing to be positive about it. And I still think, gosh, thank goodness he didn't leave when the baby had ear infections, or thank goodness, you know, this didn't happen then. And it was silly humor to myself, and I would start laughing about it then with anybody who visits, you know, and I kept it to a very small group of friends, and I would cry. I didn't realize I could cry so much because I was just a bubbly, happy person in general. But being graceful is probably the most feminine characteristic about myself. I didn't shut down. I wasn't holding my head in shame. I didn't run away somewhere. I said, no, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to continue to do what I think will bring me and my kids some joy, one chunk at a time, one bite at a time, and keep building on it. We had some interesting shifts and rituals this past year because for Thanksgiving, the kids were with dad. What was I going to do? I said, I will just go spend time with myself. I did a silent retreat at home right here. No turkey. But prior to that, I said, you know what? Who says Thanksgiving cannot be the prior 3 days? The 3 days before that, I was hosting. I was cooking. I was storming up the kitchen. I'd stopped cooking meat because my ex would eat a lot of chicken and meat. And so I stopped cooking meat in this house, except for Sammy once in a while. But I started making chicken again. It's like, great. I had an amazing yoga retreat on the Festival of Lights with my dear yogi friends. And I went off to Hendersonville and was just sitting and laughing with everybody over wine. And it's like the essence of lighting the lamp within was another ritual. So that grace to say, how do I still keep the core essence of who I am, what I believe in, was tough to kind of bring out rather than kind of cave into the traditions and the rituals. I love my parents. It was tough on them from their perspective, from a society aspect. Yet how do I show my love? How do I show my care? I would still call them. We would go into these long discussions of what if that, what if this? And I had to tell them that it's okay. I love my brother, my younger one. He turned out to be my elder brother through this journey, through all this. My extended family, the cousins. And I didn't give up on the belief in love. I opened up the conversation with my grandmother's, the affection and love. I didn't lose the spirit of life. And that was astonishing for me. I still celebrated my girls. I still celebrated the house chilling party. I still celebrated the little wins here and there. I would laugh throughout my sabbatical. I would keep writing. I have 20 journals now and hope to finish the book someday. Hope to launch the little podcast with those little aha moments that I had all along and maybe tap into other stories that are similar, especially for women that are not as familiar with the culture in America. And it took a long time for me to even find the basic resources, you know, like what do we mean separation group? Oh, is there one in the church? Okay, I can join. I was the only one that looked like me. So it's like, how do I kind of get through? But now I have amazing friends from those groups there. And I made dinner for one of the women who was going through a cataract surgery and she didn't have any help from the kids or her ex. And I said, look, me and Sammy will bring you dinner. So the grace and the compassion and the giving actually doubled, tripled, and it was exponentially growing to say, gosh, I don't know if I have the next paycheck coming. I don't have my unemployment check coming. No, I don't qualify for that. But I did not stop at life in its magnanimity, I guess, of just being kind to others around and being kind to myself. I was quite an overachiever, and it was tough for me to accept that this is my new me. But and then I was like, oh my gosh, I am actually rich in kindness. I'm actually rich in positivity. And once I started embracing that, I think is when I realized, and this is me, and it's not going to change that much. And I was always that, but I'm becoming all the more that in this next phase.
It's hard not to be bitter. There are plenty of people who are bitter. You don't strike me as bitter or a victim.
Thank you for saying that. There are pockets when I felt that. There are pockets when I was leaving the house. There are pockets when of forgetting passports and my dear two friends brought it to Greenville and and said, Padma, we're never doing this again. You cannot forget your American passport when you're going out of the country and take your Indian passport. And I lost my thinking ability to the point I was just like, just go, 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 go. But bitterness was not one of them. And that was another aspect. I was like, I cannot seem to hate people that much. You know, it's everybody deserves a good life. Everybody deserves what they want to be. Nobody is born to be evil. And I'm choosing this path. I know there are many women around me now, I'm realizing. Once I opened up, there are so many coming through and saying, gosh, you went through this. How are you so positive? How are you still smiling? How are you okay with this? Like, yeah, am I sad that my family is shattered? Absolutely. Am I missing the family as a unit? Oh, every single day. Am I missing my six-footer for getting me my top kitchen cabinet stuff? Yes. Yet, one of my chapters is that about can opener and the top cabinets and I don't put anything on the top cabinets anymore. But it's those moments that you realize that, what do? You work around it. It's you're here now. What do? It's not Marshall Goldsmith's quote, right? It's not what got you here is not going to get you there. And my there is in the future. So I have to think differently. I have to almost rewire, unlearn what I have, but still keep the roots of core of who I am, but almost unlearn and relearn. And it's amazing friends like Kristen and many others that are kind of rooting for me, pushing me to think differently, saying you are different. Just embrace that and kind of look at the unique person that you are. Don't have to be. We have a book club called Unboxed. They're quantum minds and they're all geeky women that come together and read about all kinds of stuff, and we do Joe Dispenza meditations. We encourage each other and talk about clovers and everything. You know, it's just fun to be around others who are maybe a tad bit different from the crowd, and it's okay.
Yeah. If we got struck by lightning today and the only thing that survived is this little piece of audio, what is your legacy?
I am hoping that it's my daughters and their strength and their uniqueness of being Padma's daughters. They're going to make me proud. And I want to leave a streak of positivity with every woman out there, that especially women that go through a change and think that if somebody tells them, no, you cannot, no, you can. And I hope to continue to express myself in ways that I can continue to build that.
I would say you're probably a tremendous encouragement to women and men.
Thank you.
In your life. We're blessed enough to be there.
Thank you. That's what my cousins say, that they are more encouraged now than every single time I stood first in a competition in school or a great gift that I got them. I'm hoping I don't let any of them down or myself down with some of the unique talents I have. I hope to continue to build that. Thank you for this opportunity.
I look forward to reading your book or hearing your podcast or both or hearing you up on stage. And I think you have lots more to share.
Thank you. Thank you. Lots of laughs, and hoping that one of the open mics at Spirit Square, I'll certainly
send you the invite.
Hoping to do some of those comedy routines, because, oh gosh, I've got some funny moments. And my current boss's name is my ex's name. And I told him, I have to call you R2-D2 because it's tough to see Padma Raj one-on-one and not go all, you know, just shake things up. So he was laughing at that. Those are some fun stuff that I have to embrace, because it's cathartic. It's also just humorous me trying to say, I really don't know how to even date. So what am I going to do? I don't know. So it's going to be an interesting journey for this next phase as I work through the nuances. And I'm hoping my scars and my travels around the world will tell the scar stories on my podcast of many, many women that are not big yet are heroes in their lives.
Thank you for making time.
Thank you, Stuart, for this opportunity. And thank you again, Kristen, for this amazing introduction for meditation over fried rice that got this going. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Selfishly, I hope Padma Nuna invites me over again for dinner, or perhaps Lorraine and I could invite her over, along with Kristen Winkelbeck. Thank you, Kristen. Keep them coming. Kristen has just been supplying many, many brilliant guests. We wish Padma nothing but the best in the future. I predict she becomes spectacular as she gets up there toward my age. Thanks, Padma.
In Her Words is a production of the Queen City Podcast Network in cooperation with Balto Creative Media. Allison Andrews at Andrews Creative, Rachel Clapp Miller, and Roshonda Pratt are developmental producers. Sally Higgins at Higgins & Owens tries to keep us legal. Our music is A Day at the Park by the group Pictures of the Floating World. Your announcer is Catherine Smith. That's me. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and take a moment to rate and review. It really helps others find us. If you love us, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com. Look for Man Listening, one word, no spaces. A small investment makes a big difference in lifting up the voices of women.
A huge shout out and thank you to everyone who has supported me, manlistening.com, In Her Words, the podcast, and Voice Locket, voicelocket.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your support. We believe one voice can change the conversation. Thanks so much.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to CleanOrigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to CleanOrigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's CleanOrigin.com, code RADIO10.